Hi, Jamie Davis here with another episode of the Disaster Podcast, and we are here at the NACHO Preparedness Summit, the National Association of County and City Health Officials, and they brought us in here to take a look at their excellent exhibit hall and their conference and get a chance to talk to some of the experts they've assembled here, and it's really been a valuable resource for us. And of course, it wouldn't be a Disaster Podcast episode if I didn't have my co-host and cohort here, Sam Bradley.
I love being here. This is the first one of these I've done, and I've just learned an amazing amount, and we're still going.
We're still going. So we've got some segments coming up here, and we were in the exhibit hall right before the whole thing opens, so you see people mm-hmm. setting up behind us and doing different things. But we want to go ahead and get into the first segment, which was talking about radiation community reception centers, which is interesting. We didn't know a whole lot about that either. You know, we don't talk about radiation True. As much as we probably should, but there's a lot to learn.
Yes, and my entire understanding of radiation is you can't see it, hear it, feel it, or smell it, which makes it very difficult for people to know whether they've gained any contamination. But, of course, you know, if you look at the old movies about what happens when people get radiation sickness or something, I mean, you always think that worst-case scenario, which may not be the case, and we know it has a lot to do with distance and shielding and that kind of thing. So a lot of this is about educating people, but what if there was an event where a lot of people needed to be monitored, or perhaps those people went to some community shelter? So that's what these folks do, is they provide an opportunity for people to have a place to go where they can maybe put their minds at ease, hopefully, that they don't have a great level of contamination, but know what to do about those folks that have.
So. Well, let's go ahead and check out what they have to say when you sat down with those experts about radiation
and
sheltering.
Yes, I learned a lot from them. Good afternoon and welcome back to the Disaster Podcast. We're here in beautiful Atlanta, Georgia, at the Disaster Preparedness Conference, and we want to thank NACHO for having us here. I'm certainly learning a lot about things I don't know. And my guests here today, we're going to talk a little bit about radiation community reception centers, which I have to admit I don't know much about. As a paramedic, I know that radiation is something you can't see it, hear it, feel it, or smell it. And I know a little bit about IEDs and dirty bombs and that kind of things, and you guys will have to enlighten me. So on my left here, I have Sherwin Levinson. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do,
Hi.
Sherwin?
I head the Medical Reserve Corps serving Georgia's Gwinnett, Newton, and Rockdale counties, and that is an all-volunteer nonprofit organization that helps emergency management and public health when their resources are exceeded. So our people train. Typically, we have training sessions once a month, and because of Armin here, we have become experts in what volunteers would do in response to a radiation disaster.
And being a member of some volunteer organizations, including an MRC, I can appreciate that. Armin Ansari,
That's
you
right.
work for CDC, correct? What
That's
do you
right.
do there?
I'm a health physicist, and for those who may not know, health physicist is a radiation safety professional in the radiation studies branch at CDC here in Atlanta. And our job basically is to provide the resources and tools and materials and guidance for responding to radiation emergencies and working with our partners at local and state level.
I don't believe I've ever met a physicist, so I feel honored.
Yeah.
You have to be a very smart guy. Kevin, you're ORAU. You want to explain to us what that is and where do you work?
I'm a health education specialist with Oak Ridge Associated Universities. And in my current role, I'm supporting CDC Radiation Studies Branch in developing training and planning guidance for state and local public health on radiation preparedness topics.
Wow, that is a big topic, and what we're specifically talking about is radiation community reception centers, and I will throw that out to you fellows because I don't have the first clue on what that is. How in an emergency would the public know about that, and how does information get out of them? So that's out to them in terms of where they would go in a radiation emergency. So, Sherwin, why don't we start with you?
Okay. Well, let's start with why would we even worry about it?
That's a good point.
I heard a great quote about this just last week on a program about disasters, and the guy said, well, you know, even if there's only a 1 in a million chance of it happening, that means it's happening to 300 people in this country right now.
Wow.
And while that's not statistically correct exactly, it gives you a good perspective on it because you think that something isn't very likely, but it's going to happen somewhere. The question is, where is it going to happen? Atlanta's a transportation hub, and there are all kinds of radioactive materials passing through Atlanta all the time for medical purposes and so on, also industrial purposes. While there are huge precautions taken, an accident could happen. And that's totally, you know, discounting the possibility of a deliberate act like a terrorist attack. So that's why we would need to be concerned about it. If there were a concern, if something happened, you can imagine that hundreds of thousands of people would be worried whether they had been exposed, whether they were contaminated, whether they had to worry about it. And that's what community reception centers would be all about. Now, these two guys are the experts on that.
Well, and I imagine, you know, when you think back at the old movies about radiation and the terrible things that happen to people, I mean, they have this very scary perception of what radiation actually does. And Armin, you could probably answer to that as far as exposure and what the CDC role would be in this.
Sure, of course. As you said, you know, there's a lot of misconception, and just the word radiation creates so much fear in people. And one of the messages that we try to get across in an emergency when there's potential for contamination and exposure is that there are things that we can do to help protect ourselves. So those things that we try to educate both professionals at local and state, and also public education for radiation emergencies. When we have a radiation emergency, and we have a release of radioactive materials into the environment, as Sharon said, there's potential for exposure and people being contaminated with radioactive material. And there's even a larger number who think they're exposed or contaminated. Of course, they're concerned and they need to be screened and monitored. So and some of that monitoring will be done in the field as first responders, and you have a first responder background. So some of that would happen right then as they're trying to help people evacuate the area if they need to, or and so forth. But reception centers, community reception centers, come into play a day or two after the incident. They are at places that are pre-designated locations, fixed facilities that are used to then bring people in to screen them for radioactive contamination, assist them with decontamination, clean them, washing them, and then prioritize them. Some of them need immediate help, you know, attention. Some of them, they don't, but you get that information for later follow-up if you need to. So that's the public health function. And I should say it's not just public health, it's a community function. Emergency management, law enforcement, public health, just like the pods. I think your audience are very familiar with pods, and community reception center are very much like pods, and that's why we partnered with Sherman and his community, because they do pod exercises all the time, and they were able to adopt principles for radiation screening and have the community reception centers built and exercised on that model.
That makes sense. So, Kevin, would I assume your role has a lot to do with education in the community?
That's correct. A major push from CDC and ORAU has been reaching out to state and local partners and really trying to demystify radiation and empower those jurisdictions to respond confidently and competently to a radiation emergency. So population monitoring is one part in the entire response paradigm, but it's a really, really important part. Because if people don't feel secure or safe during the response, it erodes that trust in the overall management of the response. And especially for a radiation emergency, a hazard that is so misunderstood or poorly understood, it's really important to show that you have a confident workforce that can come and address those needs, even if they're perceived needs. I might be contaminated, as opposed to real needs. I definitely know I'm contaminated. It's kind of easy to know when you're sick, if you're, you know, talking about biological agents or you're talking about chemical exposure. But radiation, you don't see the effects right away, and there's so much mystery around it for so many people that we need to make sure we're really trying to address all of their concerns, not just the immediate concerns, but the long-term concerns. That's why we have registration initiatives afterwards. That's why we do a lot of extensive public health follow-up and really mental health counseling and providing services to address those mental and behavioral health needs as well. Very critical.
So once these people are registered in a center, you're able to track them? Because like you said, sometimes these things may not show up right away. Radiation has some very long-term effects. And working for a public safety agency, for a fire department, we of course worry about our responders and that we might walk into a situation in which we're not even aware that radiation is an element. And so that's a different perspective that, you know, what do we do? What do we need to know walking into a radiation emergency? Now, a lot of departments carry Geiger counters, they carry CO2 detectors and that kind of thing. But beyond that, we don't get a great amount of education in radiation. Where can we learn more?
Well, there's a lot of resources available. Some of them involves travel, and I know how difficult that is for some. So now the trend is to provide online training. And a number of organizations provide online training. Much of it is free, the ones that are produced by government. And we are now at CDC developing online module training. There's a brief trainings, and of course they're free of charge. And we have the very first set, actually Kevin was involved in that, radiation basics. And that's a 1.5 hour of training done in the various segments. And Kevin was really instrumental in organizing that. So that's available. There's lots of training available that people can take. And, you know, you mentioned the first responder again. Another issue with population monitoring is that it impacts other public health and mass care functions. One thing about radiation emergencies is that you would have a displaced population, right? Mm-hmm. People might evacuate immediately, or they might shelter in place and then evacuate. But the end result is that potentially a large population that needs shelter. And if you don't do population monitoring, screening at community reception centers, then you can't support mass care also. So having the capability in the community level to be able to do that monitoring and screening, provide those services to people, would impact other functions too, including mass care.
I think we would all agree the more people know about a given subject, the less afraid of it they're going to be, and that there are resources, there are places to go, and there are people like you that are going to be there to let them know exactly what level of contamination they have or the fact they don't have any at all, which would make them feel much better.
If I may add one more thing, is that the importance of partnership with Sharon at the MRC unit in actually my own community was extremely important, because none of the guidance documents and training stuff that we produce really means anything unless it can be adopted and implemented at the local level where the services are provided and work is performed. And Sharon, through his leadership, I'll let him speak what he did instead of me talking. And what he did in the community in our county was extremely important to demonstrate the concept that this can be done at the level, community level.
Well, our volunteers are very engaged and very interested in improving the safety of our community. I mean, that's why they volunteer. And of course, the issue of radiation is a little scary at first, but thanks to both of these gentlemen, they actually had very good training to familiarize themselves with what the hazards are. And it's like people who work with electricity or, you know, use a stove. I mean, working with fire, it's just learning how. My 3-year-old granddaughter knows to stay away from the stove, but she doesn't really understand how to use it safely. She'll learn, and most people learn that, but really it isn't that much more complicated. You may not be able to see it, but there are ways to find out where it is, and they've learned how to use the instrumentation, how to understand what's involved, and that, you know, it's not an all or nothing proposition. Right now we are sitting here being exposed to radiation. And, you know, different kinds, but what we're talking about is ionizing radiation, and we're being exposed to more of that here right now than we would be in Chicago, because we're at roughly 1,000 feet elevation, and Chicago has 1,000 feet more air shielding from cosmic radiation. We're also more exposed because we're on granite, and there are more radioactive materials in granite than in the sandy soil of Chicago. Nobody worries about it a whole lot. That's part of just living. So it's a matter of degree. You know, if I'm this far from the stove, I'm not getting burned. If I'm closer, my hand's warm. If I, you know, that was too hot. You know, it's really a matter of degree. And you have to learn that it's possible to be safe and not be worried about it.
Wow, this is an amazing subject, and I could certainly talk for another hour, but I think we're going to get booted off here very soon. Any parting thoughts that you, I'd love to maybe get the link on the CDC training that you have coming up so we can put that in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Because I think people would like to. I mean, I know a little of what you were talking about in terms of what we learn in the field and in terms of shielding and time and distance and those kinds of things that maybe even the general public doesn't know. So any resource we have for folks to learn more about this is really helpful. Thank you so much. I mean, the collaborative effort between all of you, and even though what you do is very different, the fact you're coming together to educate the public, I think, is a wonderful thing.
Well, that's the first hurdle for RAD preparedness. You have to have that baseline knowledge of the hazard. I mean, any hazard. If you don't have that baseline knowledge, you can't respond effectively. So hopefully we're making a dent in it.
Well, that was just fascinating, Sam. You know, you really got into the topic there. I know that discussion just really rolled along, and you guys got to a lot of great information.
Yes, and I think it's great information for the public to know that if there is a radiation event, there is a place for them to go, and there are experts out there to monitor them and to handle any issue they may have.
And, you know, for the responders and other people that are checking out the Disaster Podcast, you need to know that these resources are there for you and your families as well.
Absolutely, because responders are, like I said, you can't see it, hear it, feel it, or smell it, so even responders won't be aware that they may have been affected.
And the symptoms don't show up right away. It's not like an injury
Absolutely.
That you get or something.
Could
a traumatic
years.
Injury or an event, this could be something that doesn't show up for a week or two or a little longer.
Or even longer. But this way you also know if it's not an issue, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, definitely. Now, we actually have another extra pickup segment, a little
we
special
did.
Extra that,
was
that we
fun.
Picked up. Mrs. Virginia International came
yes.
by. She's a weather meteorologist, weather person.
10 years as a meteorologist.
And she won this pageant, and her platform as Mrs. Virginia International is to talk about meteorological and weather preparedness, which was interesting when she came by the booth and wanted to do a segment. I thought it would be a perfect addition to a little add-on segment to the Disaster Podcast.
Yes, we called it a Disaster Podcast Quickie. I really wish I'd had more time with her. I hope in the future we can capture her because she's doing a great thing. She's out there really trying to educate the public on disaster preparedness, and she's just a delightful person to talk to.
Yeah.
And she's got a very, in fact, we met her through Twitter.
Yes.
The day before, and she happened to pop down and say hi. So we did a little interview with her. Hopefully spend some time with her in the future. She's doing good stuff out
let's
there.
Check out what you had to say when you and Cheryl got together.
Yes. Hello again. This is Sam Bradley with the Disaster Podcast, and we could call this a Disaster Podcast Quickie because I have a special guest in to speak with us, and we didn't want to escape without a few minutes with Mrs. Cheryl Nelson. And she's, you can't see the whole sash there, but she's Mrs. Virginia.
Yes. There you go.
International. And you're a meteorologist. I'm such a weather junkie. I love that. I wish we could spend a lot of time talking about that. But
yes.
I want to focus on what you do. And as I understand it, you do a lot of education across the state on disaster preparedness. So I'm just going to let you talk about that for a minute.
Sure, absolutely. Yes, so I'm a meteorologist. I've done that for 10 years. And basically, I feel that people have gotten too complacent. And not just Virginia, but we're talking all over the United States and even the world. And people don't prepare, in my mind, unless something happens to them, if they experience a natural disaster. So I want them to prepare now. I want more emphasis to be on preparedness instead of response and recovery. We could save so much money if we actually spent money and put plans of action into preparing. So I talk to school-age children in elementary schools all around Virginia. I talk to Kiwanis and Rotary clubs, getting some of the older generation involved. I'd like to also get in with the special needs groups and the elderly as well, and then pets. The pets have to have a plan, too. The family has to know what they're going to do with their pet. So it affects everybody, everywhere. No one is immune from natural disasters.
So what are some of the key points that you tell folks?
Well, I tell them, first, you need to know your risk. So depending on where you live, whether it be Virginia or Arizona, Montana, what have you, know what types of natural disasters affect your area. Now, in Virginia, we get a lot of them, from tornadoes and hurricanes to winter storms, even earthquakes. So a lot of things happen in Virginia, and that translates to other parts of the country. So you got to know your risk. You need to have a plan. So that means talking to everybody in your family. Talk to your business. Talk to your kids. Do you have a meeting place if you were to get separated in a tornado, God forbid? Where would you all meet? Do you have an out-of-town family contact? you could all call to say, hey, we checked in, so-and-so is okay. Do you have a PEP plan? So put all of that into action. Know what you're going to do. And finally, make a kit. Make sure you have a preparedness kit. Everybody in your family has one. Of course, it includes the water. You need a lot of water. You need your non-perishable foods. Safety records and papers, insurance information, identification information,
medication,
pet supplies, so many things that you need to have, flashlights and batteries, weather ready or weather radio, a lot of people need to have as well. And people, I learned, don't have this stuff. They run to the store at the last minute when they see a hurricane could be approaching.
You always see that on TV. Everybody's buying out all the water and the milk and the dog food. And
it blows my mind. If everybody was prepared now, you wouldn't see the mass chaos at the store at the last minute. That's my goal, to get them to prepare.
So where can people learn more about you? I wish we had more time to talk. Maybe we can catch up with you on one of the next ones that
Absolutely.
We do. But where can they go to find out more information about you and what
sure.
you do and maybe good links to preparedness sites?
Absolutely. I have my own website. It's www.CherylNelson.com, and that has links to my Facebook, my Twitter. I'm all over social media. I would love to have a following and just get people involved to help educate other people. By the way, Preparathon, FEMA's initiative, is launching April 30th, a huge way to teach more people about preparing as well.
Excellent. Well,
yes.
We're looking forward to hearing more about that. And
thank you.
Maybe seeing more tweets. I learned about Cheryl yesterday when she sent us a tweet. I said, I want to meet this woman.
So oh, thank
Cheryl
you so
Nelson,
much.
Cheryl Nelson, thank you so much. Maybe we'll have more time to talk later.
Absolutely.
So this is Cheryl Nelson, Mrs. Virginia International, our disaster preparedness educator, and Sam Bradley for the Disaster Podcast. We'll be talking to you soon.
Well, that's it. For this episode of the Disaster Podcast, you got a little bit of everything in that episode.
We did.
And, you know, we bring a lot of great resources to you here from disasterpodcast.com every week. And we want you to look for it. The show comes out every Thursday, so it's there in the morning when you wake up. And you can check out the show, check out the resources we bring to you, the interviews we do. And we want you to make sure you're checking out that on a regular basis. Put it on your schedule and look forward to the Disaster Podcast on your Thursdays.
And thanks to Paragon for allowing us to be here. Those are our partners. I wish they could have been here with us, but they're off doing important things. And
well, Paragon Medical Education Group brings a unique educational experience to the training and drills that you might put on in your system. And if you haven't seen one of their hands-on, almost real-life drill setups with cadavers and other types of experiential learning, really makes a difference.
Yes.
Gives you the opportunity to learn from some real disaster and preparedness experts. Experts on what it's really going to be like should a major event happen in your system.
And we know that's how you like to learn. Hands-on, you're going to remember it a lot better that way. And I've been fascinated just talking to the people that have had that training.
Yeah.
So
check them out at ParagonMedicalGroup.com and also on Twitter at ParagonMedEDU. And you'll also find them on Facebook as well. Just search for Paragon Medical Education Group. But we want to thank them. Without their partnership,
Absolutely.
We couldn't put this show on and bring these podcasts to you. So we want to thank them for that. We also want to thank NACHO, the National Association of County and City Health Officials, for bringing us in here to the Preparedness Summit again this year. It's your first year, but I was here last year as well. And just a great amount of resources and information we get from this show.
One thing I've noticed with the people I've talked to, I ask them where can we get resource information, and they always say NACHO. They have everything. I mean, if you go to their site, you're going to find a lot of resource information on it.
And that's NACHO, NACCHO.org.
A lot of different subjects that they have information on for you.
Excellent. Well, Sam, we want to check out where you can be found.
Pretty much around the social media stratosphere, Sam Bradley, if you search it, Sam Bradley on Facebook, Sam Bradley 11 on Twitter, and certainly on the Disaster Podcast site.
Excellent. And I'm Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, so of course you can find me everywhere under the handle Podmedic, so look me up there. And of course, all of our programming, this podcast and many other excellent healthcare-related podcasts available for you over
Check
at the ProMed Network, promednetwork.com. That's it for us. Sam, you want to close us out?
Yes, and everything I've learned, we already know that disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine, but we haven't talked about is disaster preparedness is everyone's responsibility.